Neil Ferguson calls America one of the world's greatest ever debtor empires, and he finds an ominous example for the United States in the British Empire's reliance on the support of foreign creditors.
If there is a lesson to be learnt from the decline of the British Empire, it must be don't depend too heavily on foreign lending. The British came to depend, of course, on American lending, and it was the termination of American lending at the end of World War II that plunged our empire into steep, steep decline.
Coming up next on Weekend Edition from NPR News, authors Neil Ferguson and Walter Russell Mead discuss the economic foundation and the political future of what they regard as America's imperial enterprise. Stay with us.
I'm Nora Rahm with these headlines. Four U.S. soldiers died in two separate attacks in Iraq. U.S. military officials say two soldiers were killed in an attack early this morning in northwest Baghdad. Another two U.S. soldiers died when their convoy came under fire yesterday near the southern city of Amara. A U.S. civilian captured in Iraq last month is free and safe today. Officials say Thomas Hamill had escaped and was picked up by U.S. forces near the city of Samarra. They say he is in good condition. And thousands of people gathered at the Seattle baseball stadium yesterday to attend a rally to protest same-sex marriage. A much smaller group gathered outside the stadium to protest the protesters. I'm Noor Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Last week, we spoke with foreign affairs scholars Neil Ferguson and Walter Russell Mead about American imperial ambitions. Both men agreed that U.S. economic and military supremacy benefits the entire world. In the second half of the discussion today, Ferguson argues that America's overseas debt may undermine the nation's global power. Mead counters that being a debtor nation may foster vital interdependence between the United States and its creditors.
When the dollar sinks, it's not American policymakers who are ripping their hair out and worrying, what shall we do, whatever shall we do, this means ruin. It's Japanese policymakers, it's Chinese policymakers, increasingly it's European policymakers who are saying, well, we have to keep our goods competitive in the U.S. export market. We have to make sure the dollar stays strong.
But you know, Walter, there are two things about that argument with which I disagree. Of course, it's true that the United States national debt in relation to American gross domestic product is not yet terrifyingly high. It hasn't reached the kind of Japanese level. And in fact, there's quite a lot of slack still there. But that's the on-balance sheet debt. The off-balance sheet debt, which, of course, is composed of the liabilities of the Medicare and Social Security systems, is vastly larger.
Right.
And on some calculations,
but
its
you
present
think that,
value
but that's
exceeds
also
$40
true.
Trillion. Dollars.
That's true in Japan, and it's true in Europe, too. In fact, because their demographics are so bad, their pension and medical care systems are in far worse shape than ours.
But that,
you
that's
don't
not,
have
that's
to run
to say.
If you're a gazelle, you don't have to run faster than the lions. You just have to run faster than one other gazelle. And in a real sense, the Japanese and European pension deficits and their demographic deficits are so catastrophic America actually again starts to look a little better by comparison.
But they're not trying to run an overseas empire, whereas the United States is simultaneously heading for a kind of classic welfare crisis with the aging of the population, and it's trying to manage what I would call quasi-colonies from Iraq to Afghanistan.
But again,
reason, Walter, that the American deficit really is so worrisome, not just the visible 5% of GDP deficit being run by the U.S. on its current account this year, but this $45 trillion liability which is lurking within American fiscal policy.
Again,
now, American
they've got
voters,
bigger liabilities.
American voters, it seems to me, when they're faced with the choice between a default on, say, Medicare, which I think is a real possibility over the next 5 to 10 years, and continuing to build nations, quote-unquote, in countries like Iraq, we'll certainly say we'll take the welfare and forget about the empire.
Now, I think what will happen, actually, is that we'll work to restructure the medical care delivery system. What you're going to see is actually no country anywhere in the world is going to be able to deliver 21st century medicine with a 20th century service delivery model. It is good domestic policy. I couldn't agree with you more that we've got to have good domestic policy, but that's even to be happy at home, much less to run an international system.
Gentlemen, you mind if I ask a basic question based on your discussion? Does it just come down to money?
No, it doesn't. Morale is in many ways more important. By morale, I mean the willingness and self-confidence of American people to make a success of undertakings like the transformation of the Middle East. I think there is a powerful group of thinkers and doers in Washington who are firmly of the belief that they can, quote, change the world. The trouble is, I think the United States has got real form on intervening and then losing interest in its interventions. What's really striking is that when you look at all the different countries in which the United States has intervened, going right back to the days of McKinley and the Philippines over a century ago, it's only a very tiny number of countries where the United States can really be said to have made a success of the job. West Germany, Japan, and also South Korea. Now, what's striking about those countries is that those were the places where Americans stayed not just for years but for decades. In fact, some of the biggest concentrations of American troops even today in the world are precisely in those countries. Whereas when the US has intervened on a relatively short-term basis, and this pattern goes right back to the days when the US was the bully boy of the Caribbean and Central America, interventions that only last a couple of years almost always leave the country economically and politically pretty much where it was at the outset. And I think this, what I would call attention deficit disorder, is a really characteristic feature of American imperialism over more than a century, and I don't see any sign of its having changed despite the impact of 9/11.
Well, actually, I would say in slight extenuation of us as a, you know, to use a wicked old world word that is, of course, inappropriate in the virtuous new world, imperial strategy, is that the countries where we've succeeded have been the ones that are the most important to our vital interests. The Philippines was annexed by the U.S. under a mistaken impression by Teddy Roosevelt and some others that it was a vital national interest that we be there. That was soon realized that was not the case. In the same way, you know, the Caribbean is, you know, it's vital that nobody else horrible gets there. But as Neil's pointed out and others have, at the end of the day, places like Cuba, Vietnam, and so on, were not that as important as policymakers originally thought. So Western Europe, which was the key, in our view, to our survival during the Cold War and victory, was the object of extensive, focused, determined activity, and ditto Japan. My guess is that what's happening in American politics now is that the Middle East is beginning to loom this large to us, and that we will, I think and hope, be prepared to put the kinds of resources and policy energy into the Middle East over the long term that we did in Europe. I don't think we've necessarily yet found the winning strategy or the winning combination of ways to go there. But I think what you're going to find is that for Americans now, the Middle East is what Europe was to us in the late 40s and 50s. The center of the world, the place where we really feel there's a gun at our head coming out of there, and we've got to get this right.
Walter Russell Mead is the Henry A. Kissinger Senior Fellow in U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. His new book is Power, Terror, Peace, and War, America's Grand Strategy in a World at Risk, published by Knopf. Neil Ferguson is Herzog Professor of Financial History at the Stern School of Business at New York University. He's the author of Colossus, The Price of America's Empire, published by the Penguin Press.